Today on The Grave Talks, who's out there? Renee Hill's early memories of childhood involve an intense relationship with the paranormal. Late night cries would torment Renee when she was home alone. She'd wake one night to find a levitating nightlight hovering above her dresser. These events and many other unexplainable moments would dot the days and nights of her childhood home life. Looking back on these events as an adult would eventually inspire Renee to dig deeper into the reality that we live in today with the paranormal.
Mine was definitely in my childhood. I have a specific story of a house that I lived in. Probably pretty common to have people have that childhood story in a home that they lived in. I used to be home alone a lot. I was raised by a single mom, and there was just a lot of strange happenings that I never forgot from this house. I think I was about, I'd say between the ages of 9 and 11 years old, and I remember hearing like this wailing noise, and it was like someone crying almost, and I would just sit on my chair in the corner, and I wouldn't move till my mom got home. And when she'd get home, I would tell her, like, I heard this, you know, this noise. And she would always say it was something else, like, you know, oh, well, it's the wind coming in the entryway to the hallway of the house. And I would kind of, you know, try to blow it off with her. And I had a nightlight that she gave me from Hawaii that used to spin around and light palm trees up on the wall. And I was laying in bed one night and I literally saw it levitate like off of the dresser and just fall to the ground after a moment. And I just hid under my blankets. I just remember covering myself up and hiding under that. And then another thing that had happened in the house was me and a friend of mine. It was my mom's friend. Her daughter was always hanging out at the house with me, and we were in the back bedroom. And the door slammed shut on us in the bedroom. And you know, normally the wind blows and those doors, if you have all these windows and doors open, nothing was open. We kind of both looked at each other in fear, like just knowing something wasn't right. And then we ran over to it together, both of us as kids, and we tried to open it. And the thing is there was no lock on this door, but we couldn't open it. And I remember we started crying for our moms, and they came running down the hallway, and as soon as they did, the door came open. As soon as they came around that corner and we could hear their voices down the hall, the door opened up. So years and years go by, and I think it was in my 20s. We were at like a family birthday dinner, and the house got mentioned, and I said, I hate that house. And my mom looked at me strange, and she goes, well, why did you hate that house? I said, because it was haunted. And she goes, well, I didn't know you knew it was haunted. And I look at her and I go, what do you mean? Like, you knew it was haunted? She's like, yeah, but I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want to scare you as a child. And she proceeds to tell me this story about a woman who had actually lived in the home and had committed suicide two doors down in a family pool. And at a neighbor's house, and because her husband had cheated on her. And so I said, why didn't you say anything? Or, you know, I don't know, like, what did you do? I was kind of asking her questions, and she was like, I just didn't feel it was a mom. I felt she wouldn't do anything to you. I felt she was mainly angry at men. I guess her husband at the time was getting scratched, pushed, tripped. And they'd even had someone like a priest come over and try to, you know, help her out, to move on. And so that had sparked my interest in the paranormal that I always believed, in it. Like, these television shows had come out, you know, in my 20s and 30s, like Ghost Adventures and stuff. And I would always watch because I'd be like, I believe in this. Like, I know it exists because it's happened to me.
Sure.
So that's how I got like my spark in the paranormal.
Let's talk about some of those incidents that you just discussed there and what it felt like in those moments. I want to examine some of that. When you, let's go back to the very first one, the levitating nightlight. Is that correct? That was the nightlight that you saw that shot the pineapples on the wall that was levitating?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're sitting in your bedroom. It's, you know, just a normal night. And then you see this happening. Obviously, you remember it to this day. So this is something that stood out to you. What was going through your mind at that moment in time? What was your relationship at that moment psychologically to the paranormal? How were you processing that moment in your mind as a young girl at that time?
I think as a child, I literally just knew that something had to be doing this. You know, you feel like it's, you know, you're not sleeping, you know, it's not a dream, and that it was just scary. I just remember kind of being frozen in fear and not wanting to run from the bed, because I felt like, you know, you're going to run towards whatever's there. So it felt like there was nothing that I could do at the time as a kid. I don't know if I processed it as in like spirit or, you know, just scary, just not normal. I think we're always afraid of what we don't know, what we don't understand. And I think as a kid, that's how I processed it, because I process it different now as an adult than I did then. But back then it was just fear of what could this be that I can't see that can do something like this. And what else can it do? You know, so I think that's my thoughts as a child.
Sure. If it's able to do this, can it do that? And what, you know, what roads can it go down? What did you feel at that time you could tell anyone about this? Did you tell anyone about that moment?
I had told my mom all these things at the time, and there was always an excuse of, I guess at that, you know, her telling me now, it was out of protection, you know, to not want me to be scared to, you know, but she knew something was going on. I found out later, but I would tell her about the noises and about, you know, the door and about the stove would rattle. That was another one where, you know, the little spirals that you have for the heating elements, and they can kind of come in and out of the stove. You can take them out, put them back in, and you can rattle them in the metal. Those would rattle. And when I would tell her that, she would be like, oh, the wind's coming up under the house. And now as an adult, I process that. And I'm like, the wind does not come up under the house through the stove and able to rattle those things. But as a kid, I just was like, okay, you know, I guess so. But I knew something wasn't right because I remembered it, you know, to this day. And, but she'd always just, once you tell them and the adult just keeps kind of brushing you off, then you're going to stop saying things or just live with it almost, because as a kid, you've got nowhere else to go.
Sure.
Besides, you know, your parents. And so at that point, you just live with it.
As you got older and you were, you know, kind of processing these things and looking at them from a different perspective and a different angle, were you able to, obviously, I know you had the conversation with your mother, and then she said to you, oh, I didn't know you realized the house was haunted. Did she have other stories beyond relating to the ones that you had, that and the realization or the sharing of the house a few doors down where the suicide happened, of experiences that she had encountered while being there while you were young?
She didn't have any experiences besides what was happening to her then husband.
Okay.
So she felt I was safe because it wasn't bothering her as a female. She really felt it was a female motherly energy that just hated men.
Okay.
Because it wasn't doing anything to her. So she didn't feel scared for me and my safety, I guess. And then, but her stories were, you know, his name is George, would go out into the garage and just be tripped with nothing around and end up skinning his knee, or he would be scratched. And so he was under attack there at the house, and that's why they had brought somebody, a priest, in, I guess twice, and tried to help her to go to the other side to see if they could get rid of this, you know, in the house towards him. So she did experience that, but just through her husband at the time.
You said then husband. Have you ever had been able to have a conversation with him about any of the experiences that he had had firsthand?
No, I haven't, because they got divorced when I was really young. Mm-hmm. I actually could reach out to him. That's not a bad idea. I should, now that I'm so much into the paranormal, it'd be interesting to get his side of the story from his own words and what he remembers. So, you know what? Now that you mention that, I probably should reach out, because I do know how to get a hold of him.
It'd be interesting just to hear the perspective, you know, just non-biased standpoint, just, hey, we were all here at this time. What did you experience? Here's what I remember. The connection of it being a suicide a few years prior down the road in a pool. Obviously, when there's a haunting or some sort of paranormal activity, a lot of times we naturally reach out for, did someone die here? Was there something tragic or traumatic that had happened recently or on the property at some point in time? Did you ever feel, or retrospectively looking at any of this, other than knowing that fact of there being this tragedy a few doors down, feel a connection to that? Or was this kind of just a, you know, an easy explanation, if you will, which is understandable for one to come to when they're trying to find answers to something that is not very identifiable?
Yeah, in the paranormal world, and as human beings, we always try to put together a straight line from A to B. We always have this human need to understand. And I always do try to think in all of my investigations that there can be so many answers, no matter how many times we try to put A and B together. So it could be completely something different. But I do feel that, like, tragedies leave a bigger imprint or a bigger energy. Mm-hmm. Or more confusion. So I do think it's more likely, you know, when things are tied to tragedies, it does make more sense that they would be. Sure. Just leaving a bigger energy imprint on a location, or having that confusion or that unanswered due to suicide. So it does make sense, but I am always open to the fact it could be something, you know, completely different. But I didn't have a connection at the time because I didn't know, but when my mom did tell me in my 20s at the dinner, I was like, oh, that makes, you know, it does make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't really research it more at that time. I didn't really get into the paranormal until about 7 years ago. So that's what made, you know, me believe. And then, you know, years later, someone had asked me to be on a paranormal team, and I can talk about that. But mm-hmm. I didn't really dive back into that in that story. That was just kind of what set me off to this current path that I'm on. Sure. In the paranormal. That was my early, you know, I believe.
Yeah. Being that that tragedy, the trauma occurred several doors down. It wasn't in the pool in your own backyard. Did you ever get a chance to talk to any neighbors or anything like that about them having any sort of experiences in their homes or in that general area?
No, I didn't, just because I was 9 to 11 years old. So
kind of odd. I have Girl Scout cookies. Is your house haunted?
Yeah. I never went back there again. I had that opportunity. I would now. If I had that experience now, I would definitely be, you know, asking around and getting some and seeing if anyone had some of their own experiences. But at that time I didn't have any of that.
Sure.
Ability to do that or go back now, because I currently live in Florida and that is all the way in California now.
Sure. So I want to lead up here to talking about what brought you back into an interest in the paranormal 7 years ago. But obviously there was a time lapse in there where you had grown into an adult and kind of had, you know, moved on with your life, turning into an adult. What was your viewpoint on some of these things when you retrospectively looked at them as someone like in your early 20s at that point? These were things in your past. They weren't necessarily going on at that moment. A lot of times we second guess our past. We second guess what we were surrounded by. You know, was this what I thought it was? Was that our imagination going wild? you know, where was your mind at that point in your life?
Through my 20s and 30s until I got, you know, heavily involved in the paranormal and investigating, I was busy, single mom, raising kids, mm-hmm. going to college, and I didn't really have any more experiences. I always just 100% knew that what I had went through was real. Like, I never actually doubted it. Like, I didn't look back and say, you know, oh, maybe it wasn't real or maybe I was dreaming. I just, for some reason, just 100% knew. I mean, there'd be places I would walk into and kind of get this, you know, feeling a little bit like maybe you feel this is a haunted location here and there, but I didn't really dive into it. People would say their own stories, you know, you run across in life, and I'd believe them. Mm-hmm. You know, I would never like doubt them or, you know, just be like, oh no, I believe this person because I've had stuff happen to me too. You know, it's just always kind of a thought that I believed, you sure. know, in the paranormal or in spirits. And, so I think that's why when I was offered the opportunity to join a team 7 years ago, that I had an interest in it. And I was like, you know, maybe I should check this out.
How did that come about? I mean, obviously it's not typically just a, hi, I'm standing here in line at the Costco. Would you like to join my paranormal team? How did that come about where someone gave you that opportunity to get involved in that world?
Yeah, it actually kind of fell in my lap. I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't out going like, you know what? I'm so interested in the paranormal. I need to go find a team. It actually came to me. I was super shy, and I was trying to find an outlet to get over the shyness. I thought acting would be a great way to do that. So I always had been a fan of Halloween was my favorite holiday. So I decided to join a group that put on a haunted house every year mm-hmm. and join them as an actress. And I volunteered to help build as well. Like once I was accepted onto, you know, you did your tryouts and then you were able to act. They said, you know, you could also volunteer to help build. And I said, great. I love art, painting. So I started building the sets. And when I was doing that, there was a gentleman there named Ellis Cody. And he was on a paranormal team, and we're just talking, building. And he was like, you ever thought about, you know, joining a team? I was like, no, I don't have time. I got so much going on. And well, that sounds, you know, cool though. And then he just kept mentioning it. And then they were putting on an event, and the event was at the Holbrook Hotel in Grass Valley, California. And he had asked for my help. And I've always been great event planner. I've always helped my friends plan weddings, and just I'm great at organization. So I was like, you know what, I'll help you guys out. So I kind of ran the event up there. And so when they were all doing the investigating, I was down below saying, all right, on the walkie talkie, you know, they were doing this to raise money, to raise awareness for the hotel and stuff. And so we had groups of people that had paid for tickets to hear the hotel, the owner of the hotel, speak about his paranormal experiences. We had booths and vendors, and there was, you know, people then would go in groups into what was known as the most haunted rooms in the hotel. And I was the one in the walkie-talkie going, all right, team one, it's time's up. Go over to this room. And at the end of the night, they were like, you know, Renee, you haven't had a chance to investigate. You've been so busy. You know, did you want, we can kind of go out when everyone's asleep, hit the dining room. There's supposed to be some children in there. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm. So, a group of them, took me into what is the dining room of the Holbrook Hotel. And this is where I got hooked 7 years ago to do the paranormal, because that night, we had a ball. They'd stake a little ball out in the middle of the dining room. It was like one of those kind of that you get at Walmart, the swirly colors on it, and they're just really lightweight little rubber balls, like maybe 8 inches mm-hmm. big. They put up the K2 meters around it that read the electromagnetic fields, and they started asking the kid, you know, we hear that you like to play with the ball. We brought you a ball. And the K2 meters started lighting up around the ball, and I could feel like this electric energy in my arms. And the only way I can describe it is if you were to take your fingertips and like lightly touch your forearm, like as light as you can. This is the kind of energy that you kind of feel when you're going into these paranormal locations that you hear people describe. And that was my first experience with that. And I was like, okay, this feels weird. And now I recognize it. That time it was my first time, you know, feeling that. And it was coinciding with the meters. And I thought, well, that's unusual. You know, I can kind of feel this energy, and the meters are reading the same. And then the ball starts to move just slightly. Like, I can see the design on it. You know, it's kind of like moving back and forth. And I'm like going, no way, no way. And I'm looking around for explanations. I'm looking around for, are the windows open? Is there a breeze? Is someone's hair moving? So like, it's something, you know, airflow in the room. Is the AC vent on? Like, I'm looking for any way to debunk how this thing is moving, and I couldn't. And just to have, you know, when you're in the paranormal, it's not just one thing, it's when you can align up a whole bunch of them. And so to have the meters, to feel the energy, to see the ball move, and I was just, and that was one of three things that happened to me on that trip there. And I'll tell you the other two because they're kind of interesting. But that was what got me, like, I'm hooked, I'm joining the team, sign me up, I wanted more of this, because this is so cool to be a part of something that people don't see, you know, or get to experience, and to go out and seek it. And it just became something that I really enjoyed doing.
Sure. Was there any, and I want to hear about those other two experiences, but was there any hesitation? I mean, when you, obviously, 7 years ago, the world of paranormal television and all that had been out for quite some time, and there's the word demon overused, and I need a bell for saying that, because I swear to God, I say that on every single program of the last, I don't know how many episodes. But those sort of things where it's done for a scare factor, producers throw it in there because it sounds better. Was there any hesitation, though, because you had not been involved in the paranormal, and you may, many, if you're not super involved in that world, don't really realize it's not all demons until you start getting into it. Was there any hesitation or being scared at all of, you know, where this could possibly go when you started to feel that excitement and this interest in something that was very unknown?
I did, when I'd say the first year and a half of my investigating, and you know, you're going somewhere just once every few months, I would get a little scared if I was in a dark corner with my back turned to a certain area. I would, going down the stairs of a certain location, feel like something was behind me, and I'd feel like scared of it. But like, so I did go through that phase of that fear of an unknown, and what is it that you're feeling? And like you said, as a kid, what does this possibly have the ability to do? Can it, you know, hurt me, push me? I don't know. That's that unknown thing that we all get afraid of, you know, but over the years that did go away for me. Now it is like, I can stand somewhere alone. I can be the last person in line out of a room where we had just, you know, had gotten some answers on a, you know, spirit box or something. You know, now it's like, I'm good now. Like, you get kind of, people think you're crazy. People go, I could never do that. And I remember feeling that way in the very beginning of my paranormal, you know, adventures. And now it's like almost, you know, old hat. I can just go in somewhere and not be scared. Now, I did have something happen to me where I was scratched somewhere, probably 5 years into paranormal investigating. And that did make me take a step back for a little bit and almost think about quitting. And I'm going, what are you getting into? Sure. What, you know, and then I ended up coming back into it again and just I kind of, in retrospect, I had a whole kind of change of heart on it. And I could tell you that story too on that.
But. Yeah. And we'll get to that point in just a moment, because I want to hear about that. Tell me about some of those other experiences early on that really drew you in, that to someone who had not been involved in that world, made you want to continue to discover, to understand what it is that you were digging into.
So at that Holbrook Hotel, that very first night that got me into this, we had left a camera in our hotel room. It was supposed to be one of the more active rooms that, you know, of course, my group had decided to reserve. And we were reviewing the film later, and the lights, we had left the lights on when we left, and they actually, during the film, turn off, and you kind of hear some noises, some rustling around. And the light turns back on later, and there's nobody in that room. You can see us all come in the room. You can see us all leave and lock the door. And so that was another cool first experience in that. A third one of that really drew me in was when I was putting the event together, I was wearing a very special ring, an emerald ring. That's my birthstone. And, we were lifting this heavy wood to set up some booths, and I put the ring in my pocket because it was scratching along the wood and I didn't want it ruined. Well, in the busyness of setting up for the event, I forgot to put it back on, and it had somehow fallen on my pocket, and I was devastated. I was like so upset. So later on, when the hotel owner was speaking, he was speaking about some things in his, what had happened to him in the hotel all the time. And he always says their spirits here are playful and they like to move stuff. He goes, I come into my office and the keys that I put on my desk aren't there anymore. And I go, ha ha, very funny guys. You know, I need my keys back, and I'll leave the room and come back and my keys will be on my chair or somewhere else. He's like, so they have the ability to move stuff. So in desperation, and during our investigation at, you know, 2-3 in the morning that night, I said, and I kind of felt silly because it was my first investigation. And I just had to ask, though, because I was so desperate. I was like, if your spirits here can find my ring and put it somewhere where I could find it, I would so appreciate it. And, you know, I kind of felt just goofy, like asking for that. And I woke up in the morning with like this hope that I would like see my ring next to me, you know, and I didn't see it. And I was like kind of bummed out. And then all of a sudden, like 30 minutes later, we have the window open. A lot of the team is out in the courtyard. And I hear this, Renee, what did your ring look like? And I was like, it's emerald. They're like, come down here. So I go running down there. And there was a bench down there where the people who are smokers in the courtyard were smoking. And there was a planter right there, and it was in the planter next to the bench, and they found it. So it had come out of my pocket, because there's actually two pieces to the ring, and one was found on the ground by the wood. So they would have both fallen out. I mean, I was never over by that planter. Someone had turned in the other part of it. They would have turned, you know, that one in too, or I don't know why anyone would put it in the planter, but I really feel like possibly they put it where it could be found. So that was another thing that just drew me into the possibilities of what they are capable of doing in paranormally, spiritually, and what are they capable of, and what else can I experience after that happening to me? Mm-hmm. So that ring is even more special to me now because I feel like as part of my paranormal experience.
Sure. When you, after that first investigation, when you decided, I really want to get into this more, I've had these experiences, I want to keep investigating, what initially to you was your goal personally? What was going through your mind of driving you to want to do this?
Originally, and my goal has changed over time. So originally, my first team, which was called Ghost Posse, they had a team in Sacramento, California, and another team in Reno, Nevada. So I kind of bounced around in those locations. They had, you know, all the video equipment, all the cameras, all the trying to capture proof of the paranormal so that you can, I guess you want to, you know, share it with others and prove to people it's out there. And that is still like a lot of people's goals. But for me personally, the more I told people, you know, hey, check out this evidence or check out this EVP that I got or check out this shadow, it was always discounted by people. It was always there was an excuse or a reason because they weren't there. So I got to a point where when I'm running these batteries and I'm setting up these cameras and I'm watching these screens, I felt like I was out of the experience itself. Like I was paying more attention to trying to capture something than actually being in the moment, feeling the energy, just being me in that building, me and the spirit that's there. So, but my original goal was along with everyone else, and that was to capture evidence. Mm-hmm. And it changed for me to just be, this is something that so few people get to experience, and it's just, it's unique, and that you know that it's real because you've experienced it. And I continue to want to just gather those experiences and just experience more, and just I keep going because there's always something more, there's always something different. And it's you know, it's kind of like fishing. I always relate it to fishing. Like sometimes you'll go and catch nothing, long day on the lake, and don't catch anything at all. And sometimes you get something that's just so amazing, and it's those times that just keep you going to get something else. And it's just something you always remember, something you've added to your memories of a cool experience that you get to just know for yourself and keep for yourself. So my goals have kind of changed to just my own personal experiences and capturing them for myself.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Renee Hill. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask Renee about when she started investigating the paranormal. What was her goal? 5 years into paranormal investigating, Renee was scratched by something supernatural. How did that affect her? Who does Renee believe scratched her in that jail cell? And did Renee have any hesitation continuing her investigations after being scratched? Did Renee do anything for protection before going into a location like a prison going forward? And when something followed Renee home, how far did it go? And what did she do to make it go away? All that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You do so by going to patreon.com/thegravetalks or to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you'll have access to all of our episodes in their entirety, part one and part two, as well as advanced episodes well before they're released to the public. It's all there at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.